Welcome to Why Am I Laughing? The podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Ben Harris, and with me always is my co-host, RJ Sines.
Booyah!
We're your in-house comedy gurus who talk about what's funny, why it's funny, and does the McDonald's sign really need to say over 99 billion served?
It's like a little over the top, right? Like, you don't need the number.
Right? I mean, we get it. Like, just change the sign to say, like, we've served everyone.
Yeah, you conceited billionaires.
You all know that we are just crap food and you'll still come back to us.
Are they ever going to go out of business? And so, like, no. You'd be like, well, and that's the thing. They can always say over, like, 100 billion served. Like, right. It's never going to go down.
Right.
But what happens when they stop serving people? They're like, we used to serve over 100 billion people.
I just like that. It's like that documentary came out and we all saw what went into those chicken nuggets and yet we still put them in our bodies.
It should say, McDonald's, you've all seen documentaries, but you still get in our drive through. Give us your money.
That's so good. Today we're talking about Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Woo!
That's right, everyone. Shout out to Randy, who requested this specific episode.
Yeah.
This is your episode. If you haven't seen this movie before, then you've clearly been under a rock for the last 40 years, and you're probably not that funny, and you should stop listening.
Yeah, I don't even know what you're doing here.
Get out of here.
Nah, you're okay.
Nah, just kidding. Come on back.
Come on back.
We'll tell you about it. We'll tell you why you need to watch it. But first, before we get into the goods, RJ is going to take us through what's happening in the world of comedy today.
Right. So right now on some interesting Netflix developments, they have ordered two stand-up specials from Sir Gerald Seinfeld himself.
Ooh, Jerome.
What's his full name? Is it Jerome?
I assume. They call him Jerome on Seinfeld.
Okay, yeah.
And he goes, right. Jerome!
You're so right. So Jerome Seinfeld himself is going to have two new stand-up specials on Netflix. He's also working on this deal where all of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is coming to Netflix. It's no longer going to be a Crackle.
Excellent.
And
I'm so sick of those Crackle ads.
Yes, I know. It's getting a little too much. And then he's also going to be developing new comedy projects for Netflix, which could be anything.
Ooh.
And I imagine something like, I don't know, musicians in monster trucks getting muffins or riders in wagons getting waffles or, I don't know, just off the top of my head, directors in dog sleds getting dumplings. I mean, the options are limitless at this point.
It literally wasn't until this moment that my brain computated that Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is alliteration, right? Is that the right word for that?
Alliteration. A sonnet is when the sound is the same. Alliteration is when the letters in the beginning of the word are the same.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So if you said like poop, hoop, scoop, that's a sonnet. But alliteration is poop, pecker, pile.
Got it. So I just realized that that's what this is.
Yeah. Everyone learns something every day. If you go into bed and you're like, I didn't learn anything.
But for real.
You're lying to yourself.
What do you think he would do? What kind of a show or project or comedy?
I don't know.
He's not going to do like a late night show.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, when they say, oh, and Jerry's going to develop new comedy projects, they're cranking out stand-up specials like crazy right now.
Right.
Everyone's getting a special. And so
which is a good thing for our podcast.
Which is great.
We're rolling in comedy.
Yeah. I was like, I can't think of what else we're rolling in. Time.
debt.
He could be like, you know, assistant producer for some of these, you know, new up and comers. So that could be cool.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see. But I think everyone's going to Netflix. That's where the money is.
You're not wrong.
And I every time I start talking about Netflix, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're just like making big moves. Like, this is right. A big move. All of Jerry Seinfeld and like his persona coming to Netflix. That's right. Crazy.
I mean, he predicted it by going to Crackle and saying, I'm not going to do another television show. I'm going to the internet. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was just off by a flex.
He's off by a domain name. Okay.
What else you got?
Some TV news, which will also be on Netflix, but this is more about a specific show. The return, it's of the British Office of sorts. So the UK, The Office, which came out before the American, mm-hmm. The Office, with David Brent, which is played by Ricky Gervais, is going to be...
He's the Steve Carell character.
Yeah, he's like that Steve Carell boss
character.
Or he's
character. Who Steve Carell was based on.
Exactly.
His Steve Carell in real life.
Yes.
No, yes, Michael Scott.
Yeah, Michael Scott. So the show is called Life on the Road, and it's basically going to be like this documentary about David Brent, like post-office life.
Okay.
Like trying to be a musician and an entertainer.
Ooh.
And it's interesting. I mean, half of me is like, oh, cool. Like, great character in a unique environment and a different point of view. But at the same time, like, this is just, you know, people trying to cash in on that nostalgia chip. Right. And, you know, Ricky Gervais hasn't done anything worthwhile. Right. No, I'm just kidding.
Made The Office, you know, and
I just meant like recently.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. He's been out of the spotlight since the invention of lying.
He did. Our Idiot Abroad was pretty good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I like that one.
I never saw it. I feel like David Brent, the character, is just Ricky Gervais, is just like an Englishman, but Ricky Gervais is just mean, and David Brent is kind of innocent. Like,
he's kinda,
David Brent's like, tea and crumpets. Funny, isn't it? If you think about it, tea and crumpets.
But like,
he's just very British.
But then he makes you feel stupid. He's like, no, it's not funny. You're stupid. You're a stupid person. Yeah, shut up.
I only watched a couple episodes of the actual UK Office.
But not David Brent. Like, I'm talking about like Ricky Gervais as a person.
Oh, got it.
Ricky Gervais, that's the difference. Ricky Gervais makes you feel stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
And David Brent is kind of
a little aloof.
Yeah, he's just kind of just narcissistic.
When I watched the British version of The Office, I immediately went, oh, okay, I get it. It's happening. And then I went, oh, wait, that's the guy from Pirates of the Caribbean. Do you know who I'm talking about? The Dwight character is the guy who gets stabbed with the fork.
And he's got the glass eye.
And then I turned it off and watched Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
Way better.
Do you have any more news, Rage?
How about sea turtles, mate? I just gave like the weirdest face ever. That's why he's laughing.
Is that your best, Johnny Depp?
What about sea turtles, mate? Give me some rum and a sea turtle, and I'll take you all the way to Antarctica.
Does your Johnny Depp have to be, like, on the verge of falling asleep?
Yes. That's how I feel like he looks at it. He's like, I'm not about to fall asleep, but I swear if I found a pillow, I probably could.
Oh, my gosh. Is there any more news?
No, unless you just want to have me keep doing my Johnny Depp impression.
Please don't.
All right.
So, like we said, we're talking about Monty Python and the Holy Grail. This week, we're going to get into it. A little brief history. Obviously, we could go very in-depth into Monty Python, but we're just going to give some history for Holy Grail because mm-hmm. we want to save some of those good nuggets for other shows we're going to make. But Monty Python established themselves as sketch comedians who never took themselves too seriously. They were pioneers in a whole new era of comedy with three seasons of their show, Monty Python's Flying Circus, under their belt, as well as their first film, and now for something completely different. The idea for Monty Python's second film originated in between the third and fourth seasons of Flying Circus in 1975. The film is set in medieval England and follows King Arthur and his quest for the Holy Grail.
Dun, 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 dun.
So, like, these guys have worked together a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Their story of how they came together is a whole episode in itself.
Don't even bother getting into it.
But so Flying Circus is basically, I mean, it's uncomparable, but the best we can do is, you know, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, for relatability standards, yeah.
Yeah, England and
it's a sketch show.
70s, yeah.
It's a sketch show. A sketch show the likes of which had never been seen before.
And like, I mean, they've influenced everyone, but I don't think we've seen anything like it.
No, they got to lay the groundwork for so many things, and I will get to talk about a lot of these things.
I just feel like their voice is so unique, it's uncopyable.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, the legacy still holds true. If you were to go to a Hot Topic, you'd see their stupid, like, Killer Rabbit t-shirts still hanging up on the wall, or a bunch of other merchandise. Oh, no, it's the Killer Rabbit slippers that have, like, blood dripping on their face. Or, like, the Black Knight, you know,
yes,
with no limbs sitting on somebody's shirt. It's only a flesh wound. All these cheesy lines that are just like all over the place.
Yeah.
It's still a comedy standard today.
Right. And truly, I mean, this is their second film that debuted in theaters, but technically this is really their first attempt at a story.
Yeah, film.
Because
yeah.
Now for something completely different is, you know, taking from past seasons of Flying Circus,
right,
and just doing more sketch stuff.
Yeah.
So this is them actually crafting a story. And
more or less.
Maybe it fails or maybe it doesn't.
Mm.
Just kidding. It's a hit. There's no question about
that. We'll find
that.
Out.
No, there's not any controversy about that. But we need to answer the famous question.
What's a controversy?
You don't know?
I've never heard of it said like that before.
Well, then that's a controversy for you. Here's the question, though. Why is it funny? That's why we're here.
Oh.
That's why we assemble behind this Arby's every week to answer that age-old question.
The rent is just the right amount of money to keep me coming back
to Arby's
for an Arby's melt and a podcast with you. Please do enlighten me.
Deal.
Enlighten us all.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail is funny, nay, gold, because it captures this perfect balance between humor and just ridiculousness. It uses harsh reality of medieval times contrasted with pure lunacy of the Python crew just parading about with a coconut army and a cast of hilarious and insane characters. This film is timeless. It's untouchable, and as it captures just the best of so many different comedy categories. It's got slapstick, dry humor, dark humor, observational. It's just all around silly, ridiculous, just nonsense.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. Like, it's its own category of nonsense.
And that's, I mean, without going too deep into the Monty Python lore at their core, they just do ridiculous things. And that was where they started with Flying Circus. We're going to do something that no one else is doing and it has done before, and we're doing our own thing. And it's just showing how ridiculous this world is. You know, we're not going to do political satire. We're going to make fun of people who are just in politics or, like, just stupid things in general. Like, look how idiotic this person is for wearing a suit, or, oh, we're going to get some lumberjacks dressed up, or, oh, we're going to spend 10 minutes having a conversation about cheese. Like,
right.
It doesn't have to make any sense, and it doesn't matter because they can make anything funny.
Well, that's the thing, is they really wanted to take conventional anything, conventional television, conventional movies, conventional writing, and just, like, make fun of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing was off limits.
Yeah.
Very different to maybe nowadays standards. I just recently watched a video with John Cleese talking about how we've gotten too sensitive.
Oh, yeah.
And back in the day when nothing was sacred, that's was, like, ripe for...
Yeah, and
comedy.
I mean, and maybe this is one of the conversations that we'll have later on in the show about sensitivity in comedy, because I think that John Cleese makes a good point that, you know, back in the 60s, you could say whatever racist, sexist, homophobic
sure.
thing you want, and granted, it had to be funny, and it's fine, and mm-hmm. nowadays, you know, whether it's funny or not doesn't matter, maybe you shouldn't say that. So that's a whole other conversation, but I think the fact that they could and did do that paved the way for us to have that conversation, right?
Right.
I think that's so important. Like, the pioneers in comedy, whether they were insensitive or not, doesn't matter. It led us to a point in our progression in comedy to go, hey, maybe we should or shouldn't be making these kinds of jokes, or maybe this isn't the right way to go about this kind of comedy.
Right.
So I love that. I could talk forever about that, but you're right. Everything was off limits. I mean, everything was off limits.
They weren't allowed to talk about anything.
Yeah, they weren't very successful.
Well, sort of in a way. I mean, it was kind of like the first time that they went off limits.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I think in a lot of ways, Monty Python and the Holy Grail is just a spoof of, like, how movies work.
Right.
If you think about it, like, the movie itself doesn't take itself seriously.
Right.
It's a joke on this epic tale of King Arthur and how he, like, cinema in the 1960s, you could tell by the way they were satirizing this, it took itself way too seriously and was just like, oh, this is such an important film and an artistic viewpoint on how this character triumphs over. And the Monty Python guys just weren't buying that.
Well, you can tell that right away by how this movie comes straight out of the gate. Well, besides the credits, which we'll talk about later, with establishing its plot that doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
So the whole plot of the movie, like, probably could be broken down into like a 5-minute film. Like, if you think about actual plot developing moments, it's probably broken down. The rest is nothing that has anything to do with the plot.
It's a sketch show with 5 minutes of plot.
Right. Yeah, sure. And so, like, immediately King Arthur comes out and he's, you know, saying these things that are establishing what he's trying to do. And he's immediately met with opposition. And it's not even opposition to him, like a good narrative where he has to overcome something. It's addressing the fact that he doesn't have a horse, which has nothing to do with anything.
I know. And it's that kind of stuff over and over again, where it's like the movie tripping over itself. Like, the way that movies and stories should go, it's betraying the audience, which, again, we talk about the betrayal as, like, that's what makes things funny in comedy. The audience is watching this movie thinking, like, oh, he's going to come to this castle and he's going to try to find a knight for his court in Camelot. Right. But wait, now they're having this discussion about whether or not they have horses and they have coconuts instead, and why not? And yeah, I think the plot basically is just Arthur tries to get knights on his court for Camelot, and then he tries to get the Holy Grail with those knights.
Very simple.
And I would say the secondary plot, which I would still say is part of the plot, is there's a modern historian commentating on this King Arthur story in real modern day 1975, and then he gets murdered by a knight in a sword who rides by on a horse and slits his throat, and then cops are trying to investigate his murder throughout the film.
Right, which
is a total fourth wall break in and of itself. And it's
right, it's like a third wall break, because they're not directly addressing the audience. It's just, is this a movie within a movie?
Yeah.
What time are we in this movie? Like, obviously, the majority of this movie is in,
932 AD England.
Right.
Like they say.
Exactly. But then brief moments are current day. So are these people just dressing up? Or are those cops from the future?
Yeah.
Like,
is this Terminator situation going on? I don't quite understand.
Come with me if you want to be silly. Yeah, it's the future, but the past. The point is, the plot is just almost nonsensical. It's unimportant.
It doesn't matter.
The point of the movie is for them to make these jokes.
Right.
For them to go scene to scene and get stopped. Even stop so bad that they can't, like, the antagonist doesn't even recognize what they're saying. It's just to make the joke.
Right.
So some of these jokes are in the opening scene with the coconuts, the witch, the knights who say knee, the black knight. These are iconic bits.
Yeah.
Iconic. These are the things that go on the t-shirts. Like,
yeah,
the French
taunter.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, like, it's so funny how the gist of this movie, unimportant.
Mm-hmm.
The bits, the nonsense,
the one-liners,
totally iconic.
Yeah. And I mean, as we get into a lot of the style here, because obviously that is the movie, is the style and types of comedy that are exhibited here. They tell you what type of movie to expect, or rather comedic experience to expect, right away.
With the credits. Ugh.
And that is by far one of my favorite things, because I think we talked about this when we talked about Christmas Vacation. It's like, you know what year it is when you see the beginning credits. Uh-huh. Has nothing to do with the movie. This is 1975. This is in the bulk, in the thick of all these opening movies credits, do these long ass opening credits have nothing to do with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so good. They just have this, you know, these just black screen, white letter print, all these credits. And on the bottom is like these subtitles.
Yeah.
The Swedish subtitles.
Yeah.
And it's like, at first it's kind of like narrating it in Sweden. And then all
but
this...
But not at all.
But not, yeah.
Like, it's just taking the words and doing what they would sound like if somebody was trying to say the same word in Swedish.
Like, wick. Yeah. Also wick.
Yeah.
Also wick. Instead of, like, this is saying, with Graham Chapman, yeah. Michael Palin. Also wick and stuff like that. And then it turns into, like... So it's still showing the credits, but then it also has, like, kind of like a advertisement for Sweden, like, vacationing. It's like, why not try going to visit Sweden?
But then it focuses on this experience that whoever is typing in these subtitles had with his sister and a moose.
Yeah.
And then it just hones in on the moose.
Well, it starts talking about moose is, like, crazy. Yeah, it's like all... And then it's like... And then you notice it's like... It, well, then it cuts, and it's like, sorry, the people who were doing these Swedish subtitles have been sacked.
Right.
Credits start up again, and it starts showing, you read the credits, and it's like, moose extra, moose costume, moose lawyer, like, all these things.
There's usually, like, towards the end, there's only, like, one real,
name,
bit of information, yeah. And then the rest is just about... Moose.
And then the credits go down again. It's like, sorry, the people who were responsible for sacking the other people were just sacked. Like,
and then the right people were sacked.
Yeah. We redid all the credits in an extremely short amount of time that were extremely expensive. And then it's like super bright, flashy colors with like all llama names.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it switches from moose to llama.
Yeah. And it's like some kind of Mexican hat dance song. Yeah. So, right out the gate, they have thrown in so many twists and turns, like three different styles of credits, subtitles of those credits, that's like breaking the fourth wall, talking to you in an advertisement.
Right.
And it's just like, okay, we're going to show you how this is not any movie you've ever seen in your entire life.
Right. They're already setting the tone of ridiculousness, of silliness, of just stupid... jokes, but smart, stupid.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
No, I think it is. You can be an intellectual in your comedy and be completely nonsensical.
Right. Oh, yes. That's so perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to say. It's smart. It's well written, but it's nonsense. It's
yes.
not, it's unimportant. It's
the fact, and they go straight into it. They have coconuts. They're clapping coconuts together
right.
instead of horses. Like, that is the most genius, like, ridiculous thing that they then establish as, like, the groundwork for this whole movie.
Right, which is like, it's funny because this is their first, like, story movie. They didn't have a big budget.
No, they only had, like,
they couldn't afford horses.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, let's just do what they used to do in the radios, but just make it, like, super obvious.
Yeah.
So they clacked two coconuts, two horses together. They clack two coconuts together, and like you immediately see it, and visually it's like, it's funny.
Yeah,
it's a guy following with coconuts, and it's funny. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but you're already
sounds
laughing.
Like horses. That's the funny thing. And they call it out too. I love that first scene with Arthur and Patsy, and the guy's like, oh, where'd you get those coconuts? Like, oh, we found them. Like, where? The coconuts are tropical. We live in a temperate zone. Like, well, the swallow may fly south and other birds fly north in winter.
But they're not strangers to these lands. He says, are you saying the coconuts migrated?
Oh, no. Like, perhaps a bird could grip it by the hut. That doesn't matter where he grips it. A 5-ounce bird cannot carry a 1-pound coconut.
It's just so funny. They're not even letting themselves get away with stuff.
Yes.
They're already addressing stuff that they did.
They're addressing the coconut,
yeah.
The coconut in the room. and that's the
so
best
good.
Part. It's like, we talked about this already. The plot, there is no plot in this scene. They're just saying like, okay, the King Arthur is looking for some people in Camelot. And then they talk about coconuts until King Arthur gets upset and goes into the next scene.
Right. And just leaves.
And he's just annoyed. And that's one of the best parts about King Arthur, Graham Chapman's character. He's just, like, annoyed with the universe he's in.
Yeah.
And it's such a good contrast because it is, like, that dark, gloomy, like, gross-looking kind of medieval place. Like, they do a good job setting the stage
mm-hmm.
in that regard. And King Arthur, who is king. He says he's a king. no one really seems to believe him except for a choice few people who follow him.
Well, I don't know super in-depth history, but like if you think about it, like those old monarchs, if they were just to like cruise around the land, you probably wouldn't be, you're not a celebrity, you're not going to get recognized. They'd be like, I'm king. They'd be like, oh, okay.
Well, that was the thing in the Bring Out Your Dead scene. He's like, oh, who's he? Oh, he's a king. How do you know he's king? Well, he hasn't got shit all over him.
Right. And that was actually an ad-lib
really?
By Michael Palin, yeah, which he just slipped in there because this is the Pythons and they're amazing. But that just is so, it goes to so much of the like dark humor that they use these medieval times to show that life was terrible.
Yeah.
And it's funny.
It is funny. They got like people like crawling all over each other in like the mud and like I know that in medieval times like the cat was like a symbol of dark magic. So there's multiple scenes throughout the film where there's people literally taking a stuffed cat and just beating it up against a wall and you just hear like
they have the best sound
like just
effects.
In the background oh and that gosh. Cat noise is just riddled
but even
the movie.
I mean 2 steps back from that like you were just saying it's the Bring Out Your Dead scene.
Yeah,
they don't have a way to dispose of dead bodies and people are dropping by the seconds.
I've been desensitized to how dark the movie is because
right.
I've seen it
oh,
every
of course,
year
yeah.
a million times since I was in the fourth grade. So this is like, you're right. The title of this, the first line of that scene is Bring Out Your Dead. Everyone's dying. A man has a cart filled with corpses.
He has a cart filled with corpses and he's going to be back Thursday. Like this isn't like a once a year thing.
Yeah.
It's happening weekly and people are dropping like flies.
I'm not dead yet. No, sure you are. Shut up. Oh, he says he's not dead. I'm not dead. I feel happy. I don't want to go on the cart.
I'm feeling better.
Oh, sure you do. I'm feeling better.
Oh my gosh, but it's so like it's so dark, like they
paid
make
a guy
light
to yeah. kill him and take him on the cart. Which I'm sure happened on many occasions. If you have an in-law you're just done with, you're like, yeah, honey, go to the store. I'll stay with your mom and dad. You're like, hey, oh, here comes the cart. Come on.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah, they use that dark tone in so many other areas.
Or
like,
even, like, making fun of witch trials. Like,
yes.
Like, obviously, like, making so much light of it. But this is a real thing that like people got accused of.
Yeah. And
used, murdered for.
And I wrote down the line because it's just so good. The witch burning logic, which again, I'm sure mirrors something of our own human past, which was said, if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood.
Because and if she's made of wood, then
and
she
therefore,
must be a witch.
A witch.
Because wood burns and witches burn, therefore she must be a witch.
It's so funny.
That's one of my favorite scenes.
Well, and it's hilarious too because it starts out as lunacy. She's like, she turned me into a newt.
Yeah.
Like, I got better.
I got better. That's the best. Oh my gosh. It's so quotable.
Yeah. It incredibly quotable. And all those little subtle lines in between too just make it ridiculously all the more accessible. And that's how, like, even as I'm talking about this, like, this dark comedy is the, you know, the layer below it. But on top of it, you have people, like, with ridiculous Cockney accents
right.
and stupid costumes, like, saying hilarious things. But then they're chopping each other's arms off and
right.
blood is spewing out all over in ridiculous ways, which I'm pretty sure, I mean, I'm thinking specifically of the Black Knight scene.
Right.
That the arms fall off and there's just like the ketchup bottle you get at like a random diner is stuck in there. Just literally one little like stream of ketchup coming out the side.
Do you think that was like actually jarring in 1975?
Yeah.
Really?
I think so because the way movies worked in
like I'm trying to think of my movie progression goes by Bond movies and I'm trying to think of like which one fell
well,
in
here's
category.
Here's let me like think of horror movies which were like the
okay,
scary
yeah.
movies of the time. They would do quick cuts like it would show like Dracula's face like and then it would show like a split shot of his mouth up against
right.
a woman's neck and like a one blood drop, right? So these shots like just stay still on the Black Knight standing there with double missing limbs and just blood squirting out. Like, it's just singling in on that. Like, how do you not get uncomfortable watching that in 1975?
Even nowadays, it's just so jarring.
Yeah, like I said, I think I just got desensitized to it. I mean, now we got Quentin Tarantino, who's taken obvious notes from Python. Got just way too much comedic violence all over the place.
So good. but yeah, we have more themes of just slapstick humor that's just what the Pythons do best. Like,
yeah.
I love the moments before the Black Knight gets all his limbs chopped off. Is John Cleese and Terry Gilliam fighting. It's the Black Knight and whoever else is like a Green Knight. Mm-hmm. They're just like throwing each other around. And actually they did all their stunts in that scene, which is not, it's not saying
it's
much.
Nothing crazy.
They're just like kind of rolling around, but it's just
clunky.
So funny how it's, yeah, it's just
well,
sloppy.
And that's the thing. It really shows like, these swords are heavy and they're in heavy armor. Like, to be a knight in medieval times, you had to be a really ripped dude,
right,
to wield these metal swords around. Cause it's
while
like
metal is holding your entire body.
I
down.
Know. And so like, it shows like these actors like, just like clunking around, like just hitting each other. So good.
So good. And it goes on more to just have some of the driest jokes. Like, so intelligent, but just dry. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially when you think of the amount of time they'll use to drag out a bit or a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that's like as really dry comedy. But not necessarily silence, but just the dialogue that they'll have, like going back and forth in conversation again and again and again. Like, I'm thinking of the scene where Sir Lancelot rescues the prince from the tower and like kills everybody. But the king is having a conversation with the guards and is like, all right, I'm going to leave.
Which is just like, it should just be a passing thing. Of course, not with Python. They draw all the attention to it.
Yeah, I'm going to leave the room and don't let him leave until I come back. All right, well, not to leave the room until you come back. No, make sure he doesn't leave. Right. Make sure he leaves the room, and then we'll follow him after you come back. No. And they just, go, like, seriously, like, 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And this is not, you know, and in the very same scene, there's, I think, 5 minutes of a shot of Sir Lancelot running towards the camera, like, towards the castle.
Yeah.
And, like, the guards outside the castle are, like, kind of looking, like,
and it's the same shot.
And it plays a trick on you when you watch it, especially for the first few times, because it looks like you are watching the same, like a really far away shot of John Cleese running towards you, and then all of a sudden, boom, he's like in front of the camera and just like hits the guards over the
well
head.
Obviously that's the joke. They literally play the same shot over and over again, and then all of a sudden, as soon as they cut, he goes from 100 yards away to right there,
right in their faces.
But yeah, you're so right. Like, they drag stuff out to the nth degree, mm-hmm, of making the same joke over and over again. And if you like, because I've seen this movie a billion times,
mm-hmm,
but I watched it like moments before the recording of this podcast because I wanted to like have it be familiar as possible. And part of me was like trying to, okay, let's move the plot along. I'm like,
right,
let's get through this a little bit. And if you have that mindset, you're going to be frustrated the whole movie.
Like, oh my gosh, yeah.
Because those bits just drag on and drag on, and it has nothing to do with moving the plot forward. You're like, okay, just guard the tower, you idiot.
And something that is like we said before, Python just really is all through comedy, especially in the 21st century. I'm thinking of the long, drawn-out bits in Family Guy, even. Peter Griffin falls, scrapes his knee. For like 5 minutes,
right.
And then it cuts to a commercial. Like, that is Python.
Right, yeah.
I'm sure Seth MacFarlane would agree with me. He's like, yeah, that's pretty Python.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. And the intermission bit they do, quintessential
right.
Python. When do they cut to the intermission?
It's right when they're crossing the bridge. Like, it's like towards the end.
Yeah. Which makes you be like, how long is this movie? Because intermissions are typically halfway through.
But yeah, like it, the point of the movie is not to move the plot forward.
Right.
It's to make those jokes. So shame on me for wanting to move the plot
shame
forward.
On you for looking at this as a traditional film.
Exactly.
Which
you're
could
so
be
right.
entertained the same way. Monty Python is, if they knew that you tried to watch their movie like a traditional movie, they would slap you with a fish.
They did. With the movie.
With the movie.
Oh my gosh. But, oh yeah, another huge thing that they love to do is just break the fourth wall.
Oh yeah. By the way, if you at home are going, what's a fourth wall? Is it like four walls of a house? I don't know what walls there are.
We've talked about breaking the fourth wall a lot, so if we're just now getting around to explaining it, we're shame on us.
Shame on, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I think we explain it, sometimes we don't.
But go for it, yeah.
Breaking the fourth wall is a term for actors when they're like, you know how there's three walls on a stage and then they're facing the audience? That's like that fourth wall, because they can't see you, but you can see them. But when they break the fourth wall, they
can
are
see you.
Seeing you.
Or addressing you.
Or addressing you, or noticing that they're in a movie or a play. So that is, you know, their, you know, Python is the pioneers in a lot of ways for all the fourth wall breaks. Deadpool wouldn't have existed without Python breaking the fourth wall as
That's
much, I guarantee
true.
It.
That's very true. In the scene in the Anthrax castle.
Yeah.
It's called Anthrax. There's a moment where the lady, I forget her name, she just straight up looks at the camera and goes, this is my favorite scene. I'm so happy that this scene didn't get taken out.
Yeah.
Like just addressing the fact that she's aware she was written and she is now, her written lines are saying that she's happy, and then cuts to other characters from past scenes and like future scenes,
yeah,
going, can we get on with it?
Get
are you serious
on with it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like, what? Oh my gosh, they shattered the fourth wall. They just said, this is a written movie, and
in so many different ways they shatter it with characters who break the fourth wall, they shatter it with narration saying like, and then the animator had a stroke, and it shows Michael Palin like
you're so
like
right.
falling back in a seat, and they also
Terry
shatter
Gilliam.
It yeah Terry Gilliam my bad
you're good.
And also how the story works, because like we said, there's that modern historian who gets murdered, and that whole like plot line is an entire fourth wall break,
right?
Because at the end of the movie you realize that this is like they get arrested like while shooting this film, like in real time, and it's not AD 932,
right.
It's 1975 or whatever.
It puts a halt to the entire story that you just invested in. It's like, wait, no, this is all fake.
Yeah, and Monty Python is laughing at you going, haha, we made you watch this. they get more laughs out of their own jokes than anyone else. I guarantee it.
I
think that's something that makes some of the best comedians, and they laugh their butts off going, all these people, they paid $300 million to see this movie, and they all got ripped off because we just pulled the biggest joke on them.
Oh my gosh, worth it.
Totally worth it. I've watched it so many times.
So with your wealth of knowledge of this movie, which scene would you say stands as your favorite?
Gosh, favorite scene.
I think I would have to definitely go with the witch trial.
Okay.
Where they use that terrible faulty logic. You're meeting Terry Gilliam's character for the first time. Where
Sir Bedivere.
He has to lift
his little like windscreen
mask.
Yeah.
Even though he can fully see through it, like he has to lift it to see. Ooh, hey. Like I think his character is just
my
so
liege.
He's so funny to me. And like, yeah, they just use this terrible, terrible logic, and they're right.
Yeah. What else floats? Small rocks.
Yeah. A duck. So good.
Yes. And if you notice, the beginning scene, the beginning of that scene is so great because he literally, Sir Bedivere, you see in the side of the camera angle as the angry mob approaches, he's releasing a white bird attached to a string, which is attached to a coconut, and it flies away, which is such a classic.
I did not catch.
A good callback.
I've seen this movie so many times.
I didn't even catch it till like 3 years ago. I was like, just like, oh, I haven't seen it in a while. I'll watch it. And I was like, oh my gosh, how have I never seen that?
Yeah.
This is the best callback to the coconuts ever.
In that same moment, like, there's like right before that, you see the crowd coming over, and then again, you see the crowd going to when they're going to weigh her.
Mm-hmm.
there's a guy with shaving cream on his face. Like, A, that wasn't a thing
that we know about.
And B, like, it's just like he's way more invested in killing this witch than shaving his face.
They're all so mad.
Oh my gosh.
I think the scene, if I had to watch one scene over and over again, this is the quintessential Monty Python and the Holy Grail scene when they go to the castle of Dweezil Wumbar and it turns out to be a castle for French people. Like, yes. How did you get to England? Mind your own business. And they just, they're trying to have a conversation with John Cleese, who plays this French knight.
Yeah.
And he just won't talk to him, and he keeps making fun of him no matter what.
Yeah,
your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
I fought in your general direction. It makes no sense. And he's like talking to some other knights that are behind the wall, and he's like, I told them we already have one. It's like, what? It makes
but
no sense.
But then they get so mad that the knights of the round table say, all right, I got a plan. And they build the equivalent of a Trojan horse. Like, we all know this story.
Yes.
Where you build the wooden horse and you sneak in, but it's a giant wooden rabbit. And they wheel it up to the castle, and the guards bring it in, and then it cuts to Sir Bedivere talking to, like, all the knights. He's like, and Sir King Arthur's like, all right, what happens next?
Next.
Like, so next, Lancelot, Galahad, and I will leap out of the rabbit in the middle of the night, taking them by surprise. And like, who? Lancelot? And then they, the whole time is like, the French people have been launching crap at them and like cows and stuff. And they launch the giant rabbit made of wood at them, and it kills another, the same guy who got injured by the cow before.
Oh, it's too easy.
I just love the, like, aside from all the specific lines in that scene, it's the fact that there is a French castle in the middle of England in the medieval times that is mind your own business. And then the callback.
Yeah.
The callback, the end of the movie. They finally think they get to the castle, the Holy Grail Castle of Og. And it's the French guys. They're there. And they're just taunting them. Go away or I will taunt you a second time. Go and boil your bottoms under a silly person.
And then, what if they drop on them? They like, is
like
it
a bunch
puke
of
or
crap.
Poop?
Yeah, a bunch of like manure. And there's honestly, there's so much in this movie. We haven't even like gotten into like the holy hand grenade of Antioch. How he can't count to three. Like the killer rabbit. That's like, Jesus Christ, that rabbit's dynamite. The tale of Sir Robin, which I don't really like that much, but whatever. That's least favorite scene. But
yeah. Oh my gosh, we could talk about it for another 10 hours.
Which I'm fine. I don't have anywhere to go. Do you want to talk about it?
Well, we got to wrap up this podcast. You know what that means. It's that time in the show for what we like to call Ben's Wacky Facts.
Yeah. Are you going to play the theme song? You're just looking at me. Why aren't you?
There it is. That means Ben's Wacky Facts is right now happening, and that means Wacky Facts is when I say some wacky facts and RJ rates them on a baseball field.
Yay.
Here we go. Here's wacky fact number one. During production of Holy Grail, the troupe became increasingly irritated by the press, who would always seem to ask the same questions. What will your next project be? What are you doing next? One day, Eric Idle just flippantly answered, we're working on a project, Jesus Christ's Lust for Glory.
What?
He just, like, off the top of his head, just said, yeah, we're working on this project, Jesus Christ's Lust for Glory. And then he discovered that immediately shut up reporters. They didn't want to get into that anymore because that's very offensive.
Yeah.
So then everybody in the group adopted that as their stock answer for when anyone would ask him that question. After the production completed on Holy Grail, they realized that they were sitting on a gold mine, and they went sort of in a roundabout way to create The Life of Brian.
Oh, That's gold.
Isn't that ridiculous?
That is super ridiculous.
Jesus Christ's lust for glory. That's so good.
If you said,
and bad at the same time.
That's like a great way to scare your neighbors. Like, what are you working on? Oh, I'm working on this play. It's called Jesus Christ, Lust for Glory. Well, see you later. Never talking to you again. That's creepy and weird. I mean, no one likes talking about Jesus anyways. That's why they did Life of Brian.
Exactly.
That's great. That's a really wacky
fact. I feel like it's so traditional Python. When they realized this was something that they weren't allowed to do, they did it.
Yeah.
Do you know
and
what
then
I mean?
Made it, doubled down on it.
Exactly.
Made it even worse.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's really wacky. Okay, that's John Cleese up to bat for the Doyers. And he goes.
The Doyers.
Swings the ball. Oh, no, he swings the bat.
Nice.
Not the ball. Swings the bat. And the ball goes and hits a hole through the heart of the pitcher. And then the ball continues to bounce off like all the players.
Ding, 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 ding.
And just kills them all like in that one tennis sketch that they have.
Oh, yes.
Where he kills everybody on accident.
It's like a what's it called game?
What's that? Oh.
A pinball game.
Yeah.
It looks like a pinball game.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding,
perfect.
Ding, 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 ding.
Excellent. So here's wacky fact number two. In the killer rabbit scene, a real white rabbit was used. He was dyed with what was assumed to be washable red food coloring. But in the shots after the battle, the crew quickly realized that the rabbit could not be rinsed off. This wouldn't have been a problem if they hadn't of borrowed the rabbit from a friend, and the owner was on set. So while they were trying to clean it, they had to hide it from the owner. As soon as they gave it to him, the owner stated, "I thought you guys would be more experienced than this," and he was super upset.
Did he really think that? If he was a friend, if he was a friend of Python, and he thought they'd be more experienced than that, oh my gosh.
But so there's a audio commentary with Terry Gilliam where he says he basically describes how the owner was there and they had to hide from the owner while they were trying to clean it. I love that. They totally stopped all production to try and clean this rabbit.
I'm trying to think of an analogy that could incorporate an inconspicuous home run, but I have no idea. It's like someone up to bat and then they go like, "Oh my gosh, look, there's a giant bomber up in the sky." And everyone goes and looks as the pitcher throws the ball, and the guy quickly hits a home run and no one saw it happen.
Does it still count?
Ooh.
Oh, there's a metaphor for the ages. I had a plethora of facts to draw from, but I chose this one because we were just talking about the Frenchman. The French tactic of pelting Arthur and his knights with livestock echoes the relatively modern legend of the medieval siege fortified in southern French town of, oh, I cannot say that. Here I go. Casserun?
Pass.
Carcassonne.
Car casserole.
Carcassonne.
Okay.
The town was said to have been in near starvation. The townspeople used the last of their food to pelt the besieging army. To convince them, suffering likewise, that the town was well stocked with food and the siege was hopeless. The tactic was successful.
Wow.
The siege was ended.
What kind of food are we talking, though?
Like cows and stuff.
Okay,
chows,
yeah,
chickens.
Yeah. If you got hit with a cow, that would suck. That would suck so bad. I don't even care.
Yeah, that would suck really bad. It wouldn't be fun.
That's,
Or like a goat to the face.
Yeah, or even just a chicken. Like if they're launching it in like one of those medieval catapults, like just a chicken comes flying at you, and just beak in your eye. That'd
Isn't
be awesome.
That nuts? So put that on the field.
Put that on the field and home run it. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, I'll give that a home run. But the question is, why is it a home run? the French knights up to bat, and they go to hit the ball, and actually it's not a ball, it's a is a catapult of a cow, and it just hits the French knights and kills them.
Excellent.
But because he got hit with the pitch, it's an automatic home run.
Excellent. So those are the wacky facts, and you know what that means. It's time for hashtag whale mail of the week.
Click, click, whale mail of the week.
Yeah.
Okay, really exciting, actually. We have a potential, well, yeah, this looks like we're going to have our first sponsor here for the podcast. They wrote in, it reads, "Dear friend, may the peace and mercy of Allah be with you as you receive this message." Oh, "I am Mrs. Aisha Muammar Gaddafi, the only daughter of the embattled president of Libya, Muammar Gaddafi, who was murdered by the rebels. I am writing this mail with tears and sorrow from my heart, asking you for help. My father of blessed memory deposited the sum of $5,800,000 at ADB Bank. Burkina Faso, which he used my name as the next of kin. As I have been commissioned by the ADB Bank management to present an interested foreign investor slash partner who can stand as my trustee and receive the fund in his slash her account for a possible investment in your country due to my refugee status here in Burkina Faso. I'm looking forward to your kind reply. Thank and best regards, Mrs. Aisha Gaddafi."
Aisha!
That's amazing.
Thank you so much.
I mean, I'm sure our listeners can like hush hush on this whole transaction,
guys.
But like, we just are inherited some serious change.
$5.8 million.
I don't have to work anymore.
That's sweet.
We can quit our jobs.
We're so stoked.
We can do anything now.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, the biggest thing is that Aisha is a fan. She's listening.
Yeah.
She chose whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com to email in, and you know, we've said you can say anything. We didn't expect this.
I mean, I knew we were in the charts in Libya, but I didn't think that we would, you know, be a success that fast for, you know, the daughter of the fallen president
to reach out to us. We have celebrities listening to us.
This is incredible, or as the Libyans would say, incroyable. I hope that's not terribly insensitive, because it's definitely French.
Yeah. Well, something like that.
Yeah. Right? That's from The Incredibles?
Yeah, it's from The Incredibles. I don't know
bon
if it's French.
Bon voyage. Monsieur Crabe.
All that to say, thanks, Aisha.
Thanks for reaching out.
Best of luck.
Yeah.
We will hold on to your cash. And we're we're thankful.
The best part of this deal is she's just trying to get rid of it.
Right.
She's looking for someone to hold on to this cash for, and I'm assuming spend it.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost unfair how free this money is. We did have to send $1,000 in advance to get the money.
Which is no problem at all, because we're going to get like millions back.
We just took out, you know, we're in a little debt.
Yeah, small.
But we sent it out so we can get this money, so we can make genuine good podcasts
small
for
payday
you.
Loan.
The fans, the viewers, the listeners, this is all for you
guys. This is all for you guys. And we're in it for the long haul. Thanks to Aisha Gaddafi. Huge shout out.
Huge shout out.
Love
Forever
it so
fan.
Much.
Yeah.
Man, can't wait to get back to you guys next week when we get that load of cash directly deposited.
We'll give you the update. We'll either be really happy or more than really happy.
I don't see how this could go bad. We're only going to be happy.
It doesn't go bad.
I don't see how this would ever be a bad idea to respond to emails like this. It only could be money that comes from this.
Okay, well,
not Trojan viruses.
Okay, well, RJ, besides Aisha, where can the general population find us? Because Aisha already knows.
Yeah, she knows. And a lot of people in Libya probably know too. But you can always find us at whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com. You can find our podcast on the iTunes podcast app, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio for all you Amazon listeners. Be sure to check out our Twitter page, @WhalePod, our Facebook page, Why Am I Laughing? And again, that's the email is whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com. We're still doing that thing we talked about last week, that if you email in your name, your address, and that you rated us on iTunes, we'll send you a Whale Pod Puppy Paint t-shirt.
That's right. All you have to do is go on and rate us, or just tell us that you rated us.
Yeah, and now
we'll believe you.
Yeah, we believe you.
I mean, We're believing Aisha.
Look, we got $5.8 million.
We're not worried about the ratings.
We got so many shirts. So, honestly, we are ready just to throw those out like candy. It's going to be like Rosie O'Donnell with those koosh things she's shooting at the audience at the end of her episode.
5.7 of that money is going straight to t-shirts. We have warehouses.
We're
going to
get a small factory in Istanbul, hire some underpaid workers, get them to make the best puffy paint t-shirts of all time.
So if any of these jokes strike your fancy, you can always find RJ on the Twitterverse at Rodolfo the Brown.
And you can find Ben at Coconuts by the Husk. .gov.
Of course. I don't know why you took a pause in there. Thank you again for tuning in this week. Big shout out to Randy for suggesting this episode.
Yeah, you guys at home, if you have a suggestion.
I hope it was worth it for you, Randy.
Yeah.
It was worth it for us.
It was worth it for us.
Any excuse to watch Python.
Any suggestions the fans at home have, like, yes, this is just living proof. We'll get to it.
We're coming back at you every Why Am I Laughing Wednesday with new episodes, new themes. Please send in what you want to hear, what you don't want to hear, your thoughts, money, free money,
foreign bank investments.
It's all good.
Anything.
So we're going to leave you guys with our old adage that we always say, comedy is all about... Thank you.